are going to talk about men in the movies this hour, how Hollywood has defined masculinity over the decades and how that's influenced us. From The Duke.
Pilgrim, you caused a lot of trouble this morning. Might have got somebody killed, and somebody ought to belt you in the mouth. But I won't. I won't. The hell I won't.
To Iron Man.
No offense, but I don't play well with others.
Big man in a suit of armor. Take that away. What are you?
Genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist.
Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, August 6th. How have you noticed the leading man changing over the years? What do you think of today's male movie heroes versus those of the past? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Bob Mondello, a film and arts critic for NPR's All Things Considered. His recent report, Who's the Man? Hollywood Heroes Define Masculinity for Millions, is posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And Bob joins us from Argentina. Good morning.
Good morning.
What are you doing in Argentina?
I came here for vacation.
Oh.
I'm here for six glorious weeks. It's kind of wonderful.
Oh, that is wonderful. And I understand there's some breaking news in Argentina?
Yeah, there is. The head of the one of the main human rights groups here, which has been looking for disappeared children, the children of people who were disappeared by the dictatorship about 35 years ago, found her own grandson yesterday, and it is the biggest news down here for ages. It's a very big deal. She is the head of the grandmothers of the Plaza de Mayo, who have been marching in vigils for 30 years about this, and it's a really emotional story. He turns out to be a musician, and he's written songs with titles like Death Penalty and things like that, not ever knowing that this was that. You know, he was one of the children of a person who was disappeared during the dictatorship.
Wow! Well,
so it's really emotionally powerful for
big,
people here.
Big news. All right. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. But we did notice your piece on Hollywood and masculinity, and we thought it was really interesting. So we thought that we would give you a call. And I guess my first question: what is the big difference between John Wayne and Iron Man?
Mm-hmm. Well, the interesting thing is that there's not that much of a difference. What happened is that it took a long time for Hollywood to get back to what it was doing with John Wayne. And the way that it finally decided to do it was to take movie heroes and make them movie superheroes. But there were a lot of interesting things happening in the intervening decades.
Yeah. So really the two are very similar. How are they similar?
Well, I think you could reasonably say that they're both, you know, they both want to make the world a better place, that they are heroic, that they're fighting for the greater good, that kind of thing, standing tall. And Hollywood likes to give people heroes. People in the audience are willing to pay to see heroes, largely, I think, because they don't find them in real life all that often. So it's kind of a neat thing for Hollywood to do on a 40-foot screen. Everything is larger than life, therefore heroics are larger than life.
Mm. The one thing, though, that I don't know that I think I've noticed, maybe, is that John Wayne was... You know, he was a pretty tough guy. He just punched that guy out in that clip.
and, those are wonderful clips, by the way, that you chose. That was great fun.
Well, thanks to producer Justin Williams for choosing those. But he was, you know, he was pretty tough. And I don't know, Iron Man, though I'm not too familiar with that movie, seems to be a little... I don't know, a little funnier, maybe a little more vulnerable. He has a lot more flaws than I think John Wayne had.
Well, it's hard to say in generalities that any of these things are absolute. I think what happened over the years, what happened with specifically with Hollywood was that they started out doing things back in the silent era. They started out doing things in a very stereotypical way. Men were strong and sometimes bellicose and that kind of thing. Women were more retiring, tended to be submissive, so that you'd get things in very broad strokes because you had to introduce characters and have them instantly understandable to the audience without words. Right, and so as time went on, those stereotypes sort of hardened in Hollywood, and then they were during the 30s they passed a code in Hollywood. They started following the production code, which said that you couldn't be all kinds of things on screen. You couldn't be in a revenge plot. You couldn't throw the interests of the audience to the side of evil or wrongdoing, and you know that was. That made it very difficult to do anything other than heroes. And so you got very strong men who were, I mean, you know, the Robert Mitchums, mm-hmm. Those kinds of folks who were a very affirmative look at manhood if they were the leading characters. Now, you got bad guys, but they tended to be the subsidiary characters in these movies. And so, you know, that was what happened in Hollywood, basically, that these guys were pushing an agenda which was basically for the public good.
Yeah, I get it. And then you say when those production code restrictions were lifted, leading men in movies became more like men in real life. Talk more about that.
Well, the example I used in the piece was The Graduate. The Dustin Hoffman character in that is a real slacker, and he's the hero, right? He's mm-hmm. the one who we're supposed to identify with, but he's kind of he just sits around. He doesn't do anything, and he's graduated from school, and his parents want to know what are you doing with your life, and he basically says. Nah, nothing. Just sort of drifting. And this could be the hero was kind of a new concept at that point. So you get a whole bunch of people in the 60s. There was the counterculture, there were people using drugs, there were people just sort of the whole hippie movement, all of that kind of stuff in film. Easy Rider came along. All of those things were not things that were permitted to be shown in films of an earlier era.
We are talking with a film and arts critic for NPR's All Things Considered, Bob Mondello, about masculinity in the movies and how that has evolved over the decades. And we're welcoming your thoughts, your questions, your observations. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What do you think of today's male movie hero versus those of the past? Do you think that they're actually quite similar? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
You must remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers...
Well, we are looking at Hollywood and masculinity and how Hollywood has influenced masculinity from Bogey in Casablanca to The Graduate with Dustin Hoffman and everything in between. And we're welcoming your observations, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking with Bob Mondello, film and arts critic for NPR's All Things Considered. Well, let's take our first caller. John in Boaz is with us. Hello, John.
Good morning. I'm in my late 50s, and so I prefer Sean Connery with his gray beard and his wisdom. But when I was in my prime, in my late 20s, me and my buddy used to get a kick out of Arnold Schwarzenegger Conan the Barbarian. And they asked Conan, what is the best things in life? He goes, to conquer thy enemy and put them under thy feet and the total domination of their women.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was definitely masculine.
Well, I'll say. You know, but he brings up Sean Connery. Let's we should talk a little bit about, I mean, the James Bond character certainly changed over the decades, didn't it?
Well, I think so, yes. Sean Connery was played relatively straight back then. I mean, you know, the whole, you know, he was sophisticated. He was debonair. He was Bond, James Bond, you know. He mm-hmm. was just kind of an interesting character who was solving mysteries and dealing with bad guys in a very straightforward way. What they did over the years was to make him lighter and lighter. He became the character became more jokey, and by the time you have Roger Moore doing it a few years later, he's become somebody who's quipping all the time, right? He's being clever, and he's doing less of the heroics that Sean Connery did in a very straightforward way. And then that has happened more and more. And interestingly, they I love the fact that things go in cycles like this, but the most recent James Bond is a much more serious character again. You know, they've taken it through periods where it was all about gadgets and about jokes to a period where you're getting suspense films again. And these are, you know, I mean, he's really kind of wonderful.
Yeah. And he's serious, but isn't the new James Bond, Daniel Craig, more flawed than the original?
Yeah, I think that's true. The characters, I mean, you know, it's not really fair to say that characters in the old days weren't flawed. Mm-hmm. They were, it's just that something sort of, there was something bigger than their flaws in their lives. I mean, tragic characters are often flawed. And so, you know, John Wayne in The Searchers is a really complicated character. He's not just he's not just heroic. In fact, he's kind of a racist. He's all kinds of things you don't like, but he's a fascinating and very strong character. I think in today's movies, flaws are emphasized, and I mean, you know, Spider-Man has flaws. Mm-hmm. You get to the point where pretty much everybody in a movie needs to prove their humanity in a way, and you don't want them to be too artificial, too much of a stereotype. You want them to be human.
So, have our ideas of masculinity changed as Hollywood's portrayal of masculinity changed?
Well, I don't know. You know, you don't want to make too strong a case for the notion that Hollywood is dictating things to us. We tend to support the kinds of movies that we like, and so we dictate to Hollywood to some extent what they tell us. This series that we're doing on All Things Considered is a fascinating series. I'm learning from it every time I hear one of those pieces about how much the notion, American notions of masculinity have changed. But if you go way back, I mean, just in films, let me go back to somebody who we know from very early on, Charlie Chaplin, mm-hmm. right? A complicated character, a masculine character who is also has all kinds of traits that we now think of as sort of, I don't know, metrosexual. He was very fastidious. He was all sorts of you know, complicated and afraid and all kinds of things back in the silent era. So it's like these characters were complicated, but I think there's no question that our notion of heroics has changed through the years, and that's what Hollywood tends to give us.
Let's take a call from George in Madison. Hello, George.
Good morning. Such a fascinating topic. I would like the guest to comment on, we have stars, past stars, like Randolph Scott, who were symbols of masculinity, but who, from what I understand, was also gay. We had stars, male stars, who lived together, who going to have it to places together, as they were rising through the ranks of stardom. And I would like your guest to comment on how that was viewed then and how masculinity was associated with them and how perhaps it's viewed today.
Hmm. Well, there's a very interesting book about that topic called The Celluloid Closet, which is about how gay characters were portrayed in films through the years, and also how actors who were gay and who were in who were performing, I mean, I guess the most famous of them is probably Rock Hudson, who were performing in what were essentially straight romantic roles, how their portrayals were captured in different eras. I mean, I think there's no question that it's a very different world for characters in the for gay characters on screen in the last 10 years or so, but only in the last 10 years, really. Up until then, it was difficult for gay characters, and you look at things like Philadelphia with Tom Hanks, the Brokeback Mountain was perhaps the biggest romantic story featuring gay characters ever, and became one of the big romances and one of the big westerns in history in terms of its box office. So that there's a, you know, things have changed. Gay characters are still not terribly prominent in films for the most part, although they show up occasionally, and they're increasingly treated as just as someone on screen, right? Just another character. That wasn't wasn't true for a long time, and for a great deal of the time, their sexuality had to be so central to the plot that it was almost the only thing that anyone was talking about. That's less true now.
So how did box office impact displays of masculinity?
Well, I think the audience support, what I said before, the audiences support what they are interested in, and audiences like stories in which characters are forceful and do heroic things. And since most movies are about men, and this is just one of the frustrations a lot of people have with Hollywood, is that women do not get the same kind of play in pictures generally, and certainly don't get the option, the opportunity to be heroic in the same way as men do most of the time. They tend to be rescued rather than to be doing the rescuing. In recent years, that's, you know, you've had things like The Hunger Games, and Angelina Jolie is in a lot of movies where she's a very forceful character. But for the most part, women have never been treated the same way. And I think that's a box office, that's a function of the box office, that movies with women in leading roles have not done as well. So I think you can say that that the box office has tremendously affected how we view the notion of heroism and of strength and of the things that we want to see in films, and that men tend to be the ones who are doing the action and who are, you know, being heroic and that kind of thing in movies, and that you know, it's a circle that because you see a lot of that, you then want more of that, and it just sort of comes around in circles.
Steve in Whitewater is with us. Hello, Steve.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment on Daniel Day-Lewis. I think he's one of the most versatile actors, man amongst men in Hollywood, and he's been able to play the anti-hero as well as the hero, you know, from There Will Be Blood over to Lincoln, and I love the guy. I think he, like I said, man amongst men in Hollywood.
I totally agree. He's a splendid actor, a very intellectual actor, a very thoughtful guy, who really gets into roles and finds things in them that you can read in his face even when it's not there in the dialogue. He's a really impressive actor.
Well, let's find out if you have an actor today, a movie hero today that you would like to talk about. We're talking about how masculinity has been portrayed on the big screen over the decades, comparing today to yesteryear. Who was your favorite male lead or hero, past or present? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with Bob Mondello. He is a film and arts critic for NPR's All Things Considered. We have his recent report, Who's the Man? Hollywood Heroes Defined Masculinity for Millions, posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll check news and then we'll be back. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about how male star portrayals have changed from Cary Grant to Hugh Grant after the news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about how the movies have portrayed masculinity over the years, to the different portrayals of Bond, James Bond, from John Wayne to Iron Man, from Cary Grant to Hugh Grant.
But I just wondered, I really feel, in short, to recap in a slightly clearer version, in the words of David Cassidy, in fact, while he was still with the Partridge family, I think I love you.
I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:37 on this Wednesday, August 6th. We are talking with a film critic from NPR about how Hollywood portrayed masculinity, how the leading man evolved over the decades from the action hero to the romantic lead. And we're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your observations. Do you have a favorite male lead, be it the hero or a romantic lead, past or present, and why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And do you think the male hero in movies today is a lot different than the male hero of yesteryear? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Bob Mondello, film critic, arts critic for NPR's All Things Considered. And we are talking with him about his report, Who's the Man? Hollywood Heroes Defined Masculinity for Millions. So tell us the difference between Cary Grant and Hugh Grant.
Well, you heard that clip. That did not sound like Cary Grant. Cary Grant was a, shall we say, a dashing, how do you describe him? He was suave. He was
debonair.
Classy. He was debonair. I mean, he was all those things. And we played that clip just now, and I was trying to think, okay, who today is Cary Grant? And I can't come up with him. Can you? I mean, I see an awful lot of movies.
But maybe not.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, but not really. He certainly, he's a dashing-looking guy. But I can think of lots of people who can play that, but not people who are identified with that. I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal can be handsome and just sort of up there on screen, seem like a romantic leading man. There are, I can't. I'd love to hear from your listeners if they think there is a Cary Grant out there, because I can't identify him.
Yeah. Well, let's see. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you think there's a leading man today that compares to Cary Grant? Who would that be? But so what happened? Why did Hugh Grant, this kind of maybe bumbling is a descriptor for him, how did he become at least for a time a leading man?
Well, I think what's happened is that sexual politics changed over the years. I mean, in the 1970s, we we experienced as a society. We experienced feminism. We experienced the notion that men should not expect women to fall at their feet and to be subservient to them and things like that. And that changed the way that men approached women. Now, Cary Grant had the advantage of his era that by being suave and debonair, women did fall at his feet. And it, you know, it was just sort of a, some of them were very strong. And you get a Katharine Hepburn or something like that. And she's going to put up a good, strong struggle. But the fact of falling in love with Cary Grant, the audience had already fallen in love with Cary Grant. It was sort of a fait accompli that the women in his life were going to do the same thing. I think that's not as true these days. And if you get, you know, Seth Rogen as a romantic hero, or, you know, you can see lots of reasons for a woman to say, yeah, not so much.
Right. Yeah. Well, you note in the piece that we're talking about that Tony Curtis used to say that he learned how to kiss a girl by watching Cary Grant at the movies. Talk a little bit more about how, men were influenced by what they were seeing on the big screen.
Well, in the piece, I took it all the way back to the very beginning of film. If you think about America as an immigrant society, where people come to the United States and they need to learn how to not be in their own societies. And when people came in the early 1900s to this country, they would stay in what amounted to immigrant enclaves. My own grandfather came in the late 1800s to New York, and he lived in a basically Italian area. And everyone spoke Italian, and everybody basically was dealing with life the way that they did in Italy. Well, if he went to the movies and saw silent movies, he would see how people greeted each other in the United States, for instance. And the example I used was when two people greet each other in Europe, they kiss each other on the cheek. Mm-hmm. When two people greet each other in the United States, they shake hands. This is something that a movie made clear. You could sit there in the dark and watch the film and see how people behaved with each other and learn how you were supposed to behave with each other. And so when you went back outside the theater, you had gained some knowledge. Well, what Tony Curtis was talking about watching Cary Grant romance a woman in a movie and learning his moves, right, as he was watching, was something that basically all people did. When kids go to movies, I mean, one of the reasons that people worry about violence in films and about the influence of films is that, and one of the reasons they passed the production code, was that films can be very influential in that way, that if you are seeing things on screen and they seem attractive and they seem to work and you know, just sort of in general that those things are successful, that you will imitate them. And so, I mean, listen, if you want proof that this is actually happening, just go to a movie that ends with a car chase and go into and see how people behave as they're pulling out of their parking spots as they leave the theater. There's no question it does affect things. I suspect it's a short-term effect, and that it isn't as linear as you would guess from that particular example. But I think that people do pick up hints about behavior and how they're expected to behave from film and now from television, of course.
That's
and that those because you're looking at stars doing it, and you're looking, especially in movies, when you're looking at it with an audience and the audience either laughs or applauds or does something that signifies approval of that kind of behavior, then you learn that behavior is both acceptable and maybe wanted.
Let's go to Mike in Stoughton next. Hello, Mike.
Hi, good morning. I just want to inject a comment that I heard that was attributed one time to Cary Grant. He said that every man wanted to be Cary Grant, and even I wanted to be Cary Grant. I think maybe
that is great.
Yeah, that says it all. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. So, he was acting after all. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Wayne from Hartford called in, and he thinks today's Cary Grant is Leonardo DiCaprio. I'm not sure.
Well,
I
will not argue vehemently against that. I mean, Leonardo DiCaprio is certainly an interesting character, but I don't think he has the suave thing down. I guess, you know, he's certainly an attractive character. I think he's aging. Physically, he's aging a little oddly. He's not as handsome as he once was. But I don't, you know, that's one of those things. Men are supposed to become more attractive as they age. I mean, Sean Connery is the example that everybody uses for that because he actually, he's just debonair at every age. Maybe he's a good example. Although, again, he's somebody who aged oddly. The more we learned about him, the more eccentric he seemed. I think right now he's pushing for Scottish independence, for instance. So that his, I think what happens these days is that people on screen get conflated with themselves off screen. That what we think we know about, say, Brad Pitt, is influenced by what we read about Brad Pitt the supermarket checkout line, and that that's not fair to his characters. This was happening less back in the old days. The stars. Reputations and images were so controlled by the studios and by gossip columnists who were working in tandem with the studios that you got a very specific image of Cary Grant both on screen and off that was absolutely consistent.
Yeah,
so and then you saw him that way.
Another listener just suggests Ryan Gosling.
Well, also dashing, although not a Cary Grant. I mean, and he plays all kinds of different characters, too. He's in a lot of suspense films. He was a drug addict in the first film I saw him in, Half Nelson. He's a complicated. I mean, certainly a dashing and handsome young guy. But the thing is that there are a lot of those. It's easy enough to find people who are good looking and who can play this. I don't think there is someone who is really identified with it anymore, and I would say Ryan Gosling is not one.
We are talking with Bob Mondello. He is a film and arts critic for NPR about how Hollywood has portrayed masculinity over the years, how it evolved, how it changed, and how Bob thinks it's come back to the movie hero of yesteryear to some extent. And we wonder what you think, what questions you have, what observations you have. What do you think of today's movie heroes or the portrayal of masculinity in movies today? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org.
Well, you're pretty sure of yourself, ain't you, Virgil? Virgil, that's a funny name for a boy that comes from Philadelphia. What do they call you up there?
They call me Mr. Tibbs.
We are talking about men and the movies and how the movies have portrayed masculinity over the years. And we're welcoming your observations and questions for our guest film critic, Bob Mondello from NPR's All Things Considered. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, let's talk a little bit about Sidney Poitier, Bob. How was you mentioned him in your piece.
Oh, he's an astonishing role model and a all around terrific actor and was tremendous in films. I mean, in a way that was almost startling for the audience back in an era of segregation of enormous discrimination. He was the first black big star on screen. He was. First, actually, let me rephrase that. He was the first leading man who was also African American and who was a crossover star who was popular with both white and black audiences. And he was I called him a role model. He was absolutely that and was very careful in his choices of pictures initially. Because he knew there was a great weight on his shoulders when he was performing, but you think of the things his roles in The Lilies of the Field and Raisin in the Sun in all kinds of pictures were remarkable images of strong, conflicted, interestingly complicated men, and I think in a lot of respects. the audience was learning about what it was to be African American through, you know, I keep coming back to how we learn things from images on screen. There is something very powerful about being able to sit. You know how you can't, if you're riding on a bus and you are looking at someone because that person is interesting in some way, and that person looks back at you, you look away because you don't want to be caught staring. The films are a place where you are not just permitted to stare, you're expected to stare and to watch very carefully the behavior of someone and to learn from it. And so that, I think, is what happened very, very strongly with Sidney Poitier, and, of course, with the number of actors who he's influenced and sort of led the way for.
Marcus on Facebook says, I think that the leading man, in many ways, has evolved into a very poor role model over the last few decades. In many ways, Hollywood has defined masculinity as not only disrespect towards women, but violence towards women. Our prison system has sadly become one of the ways in which we can see a partial result of that. What do you think?
Well, I think there is some truth to that, that characters have on screen being more complex and being more diverse. I mean, simply having more different kinds of characters who are the central characters in films than happened back in the studio period, where you basically got a lot of Clark Gables and Spencer Tracys and people who are fine, upstanding people on screen. Now you get a more varied group, and so you get images that are certainly less flattering to masculine ideas, and you know, it's not everybody is a Jimmy Stewart, right? But I think that there are, as with anything, the very diversity of what is up there on screen gives you lots of opportunities to see whatever aspect of human behavior you're interested in seeing, and the audience shows up increasingly at movies that are about superheroes, who are essentially superheroes because they value the things, they fight for the, I don't want to say necessarily the American way in all respects, but yes, that's true too. And you know, Spider-Man is very careful about how he treats the girl in his life, the girl he loves. That all of these characters tend to be affirmative about in their relationships with women. The problem with most of the superhero movies is that women aren't terribly important to their lives. That these are fantasies that are about fighting and about overcoming obstacles, and that women are there primarily to be objects that you have to protect, and that it diminishes them. There's no question of that. But I think that there are lots of different ways of seeing. I mean, you know, Tom Hanks doesn't generally take parts which would have him being disrespectful and/or hurting women in films. I was thinking during the break just then, who I would want to play me,
okay,
in a movie today. And the thought, I keep coming back to Tom Hanks. He's the one I want to play me because I have a very specific picture of who Tom Hanks is. It may not be accurate to the real Tom Hanks, but if I had to choose someone, that's who I'd want. That's an image of masculinity which is essentially affirmative. I mean, in most of his parts, he's kind of a good guy. And you know, there are a lot of things going with that kind of work to contradict what the listener was saying about you only get one picture of all of this. I also would like to say that I don't think that you can lay at the feet of Hollywood the prison population. I don't think that's where people learn all of their behavior.
Yeah.
I think it's where they see a certain kind of behavior on screen.
Yeah, and I would think that it's the bad guy in the movie that's doing that, not necessarily the leading man.
Yeah.
Steve in Rice Lake is with us. Hello, Steve.
Yeah, hi. Hey, I was wondering what your guest thinks about these actors as they mature in their acting ability. Like, take, for instance, like Al Pacino, where he played like Serpico, and then he advances all, or Dog Day Afternoon, and he advances all the way up to, like, his role in Heat. Or you have, like, Clint Eastwood, where he's done all the spaghetti westerns and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, he ends up doing, like, Bridges of Madison County, and then ends up with Gran Torino. You know, he's got these varying characters, you know, as they grow as actors. And then the other thing I wanted to say was the actor you said, Curtis, took after Cary Grant. One of the reasons for that was, is I heard that he was on a ship in World War II that only had one film, and it was a Cary Grant film. and that he watched it like 40 some times, and he took all of his portrayals from that one film. And then the other thing was the actor that I think could be Cary Grant today is myself, I think, is George Clooney.
All right.
So, yeah. Anyway,
I think you can make a real case for George Clooney. I think a lot of people would choose him. He's dashing. I guess he comes as close as anybody to an old style movie star. It's hard to be an old style movie star these days. In some respects, that's a good thing. But those are very interesting observations.
Well, we have just a couple of minutes. Maybe if you can just comment on the, I guess, the portrayal of masculinity in a particular actor who's aging.
Well, I think it was interesting to me that he brought up Clint Eastwood. Clint Eastwood is an actor who initially was the silent type, right? When we first got to know him, it was mostly in pictures like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and those kinds of films where he was a sort of a rigid figure on the horizon riding a horse. That he matured into what initially looked like an extremely violent kind of character, the Dirty Harry sort of things, and that we came to identify him that way, but that over the years he mellowed and he got bored with doing the same thing over and over again, and now we know him almost more as a director who undercuts some of that, who made films like The Unforgiven, which is a Western that is almost exactly the opposite of what you'd think of as a Clint Eastwood Western, and who most recently did a picture called Jersey Boys, which is about the Four Seasons, and he, where he's directing things that you don't think of as the kind of thing that his character would have done way back when. He has absolutely matured and become a more complex and interesting man and director and filmmaker over the years.
We have less than 30 seconds. Do you see the portrayal of men in the movies changing anytime soon?
I think it's always going to change. Mm-hmm. It's always going to change, and it'll change back. Give it enough time.
Thanks very much for being with us.
It's been a joy.
Bob Mondello, film and arts critic for NPR's All Things Considered. You can hear his recent report, Who's the Man? And Hollywood's Portrayal of Masculinity Over the Decades. It's posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Thanks to Justin Williams and to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.